What is happening? Welcome to On the Corner live from PitchCon 26. My name is Nick Pollock, and today Eric Samulski is not going to be the host of this podcast. Whoop. No, he is going to be the co-host talking about his rankings and how you should feel about starting pitching. So, Eric Samulski, how you doing?
I'm all right, Nick. Weekends in the freezing cold when you can't get a toddler outside are difficult.
Yes, yes they are.
But we're in the home stretch.
Yes, we absolutely. And PitchCon really does feel like that, right? It's the start of the season when maybe the grass is starting to get a little bit greener, right?
It's been fun. I was on with Lance Brozowski on Thursday. I've been, poking in when I can over the weekend to check on some of the sessions, and I'm excited when they go up on YouTube to, just like have leisurely be able to watch them. And so, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of really cool stuff going on. Very talented, smart people. And so, yeah, I'm excited. I always get excited to like dive into these after the fact.
Absolutely. And we also are going to have them on our PitchCon podcast feed as well, which will also include all the former years that we've done this event. So it'll be 7 seasons of podcasts. We'll have the evergreen ones, the ones that aren't talking about players in 2021, which does not matter, inside of that. So you can go and reflect some fantastic panels and presentations that we've had before. But without further ado, we are going to talk about Eric Samulski's top 150 starting pitchers. And I'm going to do my best here to really move it past the top 25 or so.
Sure.
Because I think when it comes to starting pitching rankings, it really matters who are the ones that you find yourself really going for in rounds 8 to 15. And then, all right, who are the ones that you're circling to draft rounds 20 and after, right? Sure. So I want to highlight those. And Eric, before we say the rankings, give a little preface. What kind of rankings are these? What are your philosophies going into it?
Yeah, so they're tiered rankings. I don't know where I got that idea. They're tiered rankings, and I have all the tiers, they're movie quotes. So all of the tiers are named after movie quotes that to me somehow resemble how I feel about the pitchers within that tier. In the article, I do explain like why, you know what I mean?
I'm sorry for the face. You should be watching this on YouTube clearly. And I'm reacting to the title of one of the tiers already, and we'll get to it very quickly.
I'm excited. same with Nick. I do my rankings based geared more towards 12 team leagues. So you will find some guys that like in a 15 team league, I like Merrill Kelly. I'm totally fine with Seth Lugo this year. I think people are have him too low. They may be lower than some like riskier upside arms in my rankings, because in a 12 team league where you would take a Seth Lugo, it's kind of like your SP5, SP6. And in that area, in a 12 team league, I'm more prone to take some gambles because hopefully I've got 4, maybe 5 arms that I feel more solid about.
And what tier would you say that would be? It'd be around 56 or so, 62. It's what I call the cliff, the real distinction between like, all right, these are the ones I feel like I'm going to be holding on to. And then it's where I'm focusing a lot more on upside than I am floor.
Yeah, so I think like I have 56 to 61 for me is an injured tier of guys who should all be theoretically ready by May. And those guys may move around as we get into spring training and we get a little bit more info. Mm-hmm. And then I would say after that tier is a lot of guys where it's like, your Noah Cameron's, Matthew Boyd's, like guys who are like totally fine, or there's a tier like a little bit below them that are the guys who may be a little bit more exciting and maybe I'll bump them up and,
sure,
that range.
All right. So we're going to, without further ado, we're going to go to tier one. We're not going to talk about it. It's Tarik Skubal, Garrett Crochet, Paul Skeens. But what is the name of this one, Eric?
It's I'm King of the World,
which is hilarious because that is Titanic.
Yeah.
And that is suggesting
no,
that they are going to hit an iceberg.
No. In that moment, Nick.
They're too
big to fail. There was nobody was better. Nobody was having it better than those two.
I would have, look, I'm just thinking right now, I'm not going to criticize this, whatever, but you had me at hello. All right.
Sure. Oh, that's a good one. Maybe I'll have to change it. God damn it. All right. That's
no, I'm King of the World is very good, Eric.
If you're a bird, I'm a bird. Lots of fabulous stuff.
Yeah. There we go. Jerry Maguire, of course. And tier two is not me. I'm in my prime. That's Yoshinobu Yamamoto at 4, Brian Wu, Cole Reagans, Logan Gilbert, Max Fried, Hunter Green at 9, and Christopher Sanchez at 10. Standard affair for the most part. I don't really want to spend much time on this. Why is it not me? I'm in my prime.
It just the I'm in my prime part is like I just these are the guys who I think are they're not the cream of the crop because they're not the top three, but they are the best of the rest. They're all aces. Would love to have any one of them.
Okay, what movie is that from?
I'd have to double check some of these. I did like a long deep dive, and I spent a lot of time, and I didn't write down where all of them are.
I don't know.
Not me. I'm in my prime.
Okay, well, we're in line.
Obviously. Yeah. Sorry. Another one that the context is terrible because it's Doc Holliday in Tombstone.
And it's also not me.
That doesn't work great for Doc Holliday at the end. But
well, maybe you need to spend a little bit more time. But yeah, no, guys.
He's clearly the best. He's the best character in that movie. And so
I have not seen it yet, and I need to. I know. I understand this. I want to also tell everybody right now, guys. We've said incessantly, you know our strategy. We're likely not going to be going after them. Okay. If you want to, awesome. You do you. Everybody has their own amalgamation of these. And whatever you like, go with. They're going to be good. So
I will say that this tier is where I will sometimes grab my first starter if they fall, because some of these guys might fall to like the sixth round of a 12 team.
Oh man, league. That would be
so. Like this is the tier last year where I had Michael King. We'll see. I mean, just looked at some early ADP stuff. Things could change, but like given Cole Reagan's injuries last year, he's falling a lot farther than I think he should. And then he might in, you know, March. But he is, you know, a possibility here.
All right. Third tier. Well, I'm always dreaming, even when I'm awake. It's never finished. What movie is that?
It's actually from a book that they turned into a movie, but it's called The Last Unicorn. But for me, this is just...
Oh, The Last Unicorn. Well, that... Yeah. Okay.
This is just... It for me, it's about just dreaming on these guys.
Sure.
These guys are, for me, they're a little bit below 4 through 10 because they're not... There's something that they're not either fully established or like a DeGrom has an injury concern. Well,
let me list the names, of course, here. And we have some injury risk and we have some other question marks. So we have Hunter Brown, Jacob DeGrom, George Kirby, Joe Ryan, Spencer Schmalenbach, Kyle Bradish, Chris Sale, Shohei Ohtani. And I will tell you right now, I'm actually with you on the Spencer Schmalenbach being up around 15 or so. And Hunter Brown at 11. I mean, we see eye to eye on that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, again, if any of these guys was my ace, I'm happy about it. Sale, right. Ohtani, obviously, they're at the bottom because for me, it's an inning. They might get 140, you know, sure. Innings. And so that's tough.
So also, by the way, Eric sent me this spreadsheet and he did mean not the kindest thing of making sure I can't read the entire quote and it's in view only mode. So I'm actually figuring out because I'm smart. I can click on the cell and see it. But how dare you, Eric? All right. Fourth tier. And again, I'm moving through these fast and we will get into individual analysis, but you guys have heard this stuff endlessly. And I know that if I wasn't scared, something's wrong because this thrill is what's scary is the quote. What is that?
Yeah. So again, I cheated here because this isn't a movie quote. It's a Richard Pryor quote. But I just couldn't find anything I liked better than this because the thrill is that it's scary is basically how I feel about these guys. Mm-hmm. Like all of these guys, if you said at the end of the year, hey, they finished as a top 10 starting pitcher, I would say, I buy it, got it. But it's incredibly risky and I wouldn't bank on that to happen, but they have the talent for that to happen. So there's a little bit of the fear of like, one of these guys could be my SP1 and it could work out amazingly for me, but it's scary.
Yeah. So that's Freddy Peralta, Eury Pérez, Dylan Cease, and Pablo Lopez. And what I find interesting about this is Pablo Lopez being here at 22. And really, that's just all about health. If we knew that he was good and ready to go, yeah, I would probably have him at 20, you know, underneath Freddy Peralta, I think. Just because Eury Pérez, as far as the volume or just we really haven't seen him put it all together with the secondaries. And then Dylan Cease, who knows what.
Yeah, I originally had Pablo Lopez in the tier above, because I had Pablo Lopez, I think, as like a top 12 starter entering last year, probably top 10 even maybe. And it obviously didn't pan out. But I think that he was better than our recollection of him last year. And if he's healthy, it's kind of like I trust him when he's healthy and on the mound. And I understand that maybe he's not a top 10 arm. Like maybe I was a little too aggressive last year, but could he be, you know, 16 where Kyle Bradish is, right in that range? Like I can make that argument. Yeah, so I just have him the tier below for right now.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to start actually having analysis with Eric Samulski shortly. This is maybe the last one that I'm going to kind of move quickly, but I am curious about it, where you have these four guys, three of them are going to be likely throwing more innings than the fourth. Yeah, and I actually, you might be surprised to know that one of them I have in my top 15 now.
Ooh, it's probably Logan Webb.
It's got to be Logan Webb. That's right. It's Logan Webb, Fernando Bervaldez, Nick Pivetta, and Drew Rasmussen, 23 through 26. And the quote is, "When I'm with you, I feel safe, like I'm home." From
Garden State.
Oh, yeah,
it's a great movie, Garden State, by the way.
Yeah. So it's the state that is just like in the shadow of others.
Yes. Great music, great soundtrack in that one. But this is just like, I think these guys are relatively safe. You and I have always been lower on Framber Valdez than I think the consensus, but that's because consensus usually puts him in like 10. And so for me, around like 25 is like, he's always been decent, but not amazing. We'll see where he lands and if that factors into anything. Drew Rasmussen is somebody who, like, if you look at his numbers since he's been a starter, he's been really good. It's innings that's the only knock on him. I think we should get more innings. The training wheels, proverbial training wheels, are going to be off a little bit.
Maybe. Nick, I mean, here's the thing. You just got 150 innings from Drew Rasmussen.
Right.
And maybe the Rays look at that and go, yeah, that's good. Let's just make sure that happens again.
If I get that again, he is worth the 26th.
Yeah, that's the argument, right? Because it's Tropicana Field now too.
Yeah. And then Nick Pivetta is like, he actually doesn't, like, he's the only one I think, I don't know if it fits in here, because he doesn't make me feel really safe, because last year was the first year that we saw him do that. But I buy it to an extent, and it just didn't feel right to put him with the guys who are below. But I don't think he has the upside of a Freddie Peralta, Yuri Perez. So I couldn't put him in the tier above. So this kind of felt like the best spot for him.
This is a classic case of, you have these two tiers coming next. One is more of the volume focused one, and the other one is volatility. And you see Nick Pivetta and you're like, well, you're a little bit of both and you're a little bit better than them. So I feel like you need to be ahead of it, but you're also not quite matching the other guys in this tier, and you go, what on earth do I do?
Yeah.
I know this a lot from having to do the list every single week, and it's just, I have to like reorganize like multiple things to make it work. So I don't know what I'm going to do with Nick Pivetta ultimately.
Yeah.
The one thing that I keep going back to my head was, it was such a peak year, and also the home run reduction is unlikely to be as reduced.
Sure.
And the drag on the ball was greatest that we've seen, and it probably isn't going to be as high if you had to make a bet. So that means that Pivetta's worse, and that's where I'm at. Those noises. So,
and I will just say, like, you said Logan Webb is the guy you said you have at 15, right?
Yes.
I have Logan Webb at 23. I do like Logan Webb. To me, he's more of a floor play than a ceiling play. And I have to say, yesterday's signing, not good.
Yeah, Luis Arraez absolutely going to second base. It does not help his defense.
No. I mean, that Luis Arraez, Rafael Devers as the defense on the right side of the infield is not good for a pitcher who, we'll see what happens. His ground ball rate dropped 4% last year, but he's been around like 60% ground ball rate for his career. Now, if those ground balls go to the left side of the infield, totally fine with it. And so that's not like, I had Logan Webb 23 anyway. I'm a little lower on him, but like, it's something that that is a factor for me with, like, especially some of the other guys in the Giants rotation. It's like, I really don't like that defense, and half of that infield defense. And we've talked about other starting pitchers before where, like, you know, when the Marlins had a really bad infield defense, like, it does make an impact on ground ball pitchers. It's a lot of extra hits, and extra hits means whip, and extra hits means runs.
Right. So the one thing that has me pulling up Logan Webb is that he has actually had unfortunate batted ball luck in the past.
He's had a 349 BABIP last year.
Right. Exactly. And in the increased strikeout rates, it, you know, initially I thought it was a larger drop later on, and it wasn't as low as I thought it'd be. I still feel like it's going to regress a bit, and he didn't quite have the whole arsenal talking to each other as effectively as he did in the spring. But Logan Webb still is one of the premier inning guys. And it's, I keep looking at these seasons and I say, am I overrating the impact of whip? And also, it's not a guarantee that it's above 120.
Yeah.
And then the benefit is, okay, let's say, just say it's 180 strikeouts as opposed to like the 200 plus he had last year and the wins and the ERA. It's like, I can't, I'm over, I'm pulling the pendulum too far based on the whip fear.
Sure.
And that's why I push them up, because I look at the other ones and I'm like, well, there's obviously a risk with Dylan Cease, with Freddie Peralta. It's Freddie Peralta.
Yeah.
And there's chaos with that too. And it's like, this is what I did of the process. Like, wait, hold on. That's it for me. And also, yeah, Logan Webb has a higher chance of being that ball and chain with that whip and pulling it down.
I think there's a case that, like, I move him to 17 right after Schwellenbach and Bradish. I don't believe he has the upside of those guys, but there is a security that I guess he might make sense in that tier.
Yeah. I mean, it's really funny. We keep talking about Logan Webb as like the floor guy. And it's like, is he the floor guy? It's a conversation we have a lot. And we're going to move on to the next tier starting at 27. It goes all the way to 39.
Yeah.
I'll talk about that after this break. So the next tier for Eric Samulski, it would be a privilege to have my heart broken by you. Yeah. That is the perfect title for this. What movie is that?
Thank you. It's from A Fault in Our Stars.
Oh my gosh.
I was a middle school English teacher, Nick. So,
okay, like, hold on.
A lot of young adults.
That's the Josh Hartnett movie. Is that right?
No, it's Ansel or Anson.
Mandy Moore.
I don't know what that guy's name is. It's a John Green novel.
But who's the actress?
The actress is actually
Well, okay. So the point is
no. Shailene Woodley.
Okay, high school. And by the way, Eugenio Suarez is going on a 1-year deal to the Reds. So that's going to be something else. The Cincinnati Reds.
Wow.
Well, there's a lot of home run power there. That movie, A Fault in Our Stars, was just like, all I knew it as was the movie that every girl in my high school was just like, oh my gosh, that movie. I was like, I don't know. It was that in The Notebook. Oh God.
I mean, Notebook is a great movie, Nick. Have a heart.
I didn't say it was bad. I just remember that was me being like, I don't understand this. I didn't see these movies at that time. So this is that tier of like, oh man, we love these guys, but is it wise? And Tyler Glasnow, Ryan Pepiot, Michael King, Blake Snell, Cam Schlittler, Jacob Mizorowski, Shota Imanaga, Nick Lodolo, Bubba Chandler, Chase Burns, Jesus Luzardo, Edward Cabrera, and Tatsuya Imai. Okay. Where do I start? Okay, I'll start with this. I have been lower and lower and lower on Michael King. And what I'm starting to feel for myself, I'm curious to hear your thoughts, Eric, is Michael King just had a lost season. Mm-hmm. And in the season before, he was great and I believed in the command. I also was really in because I thought he would take a step forward. And what I've found myself doing is wish casting to the sense of not even to the level that we necessarily saw, but also a little bit further than that. That's at least where I am, because he's more of like a sinker sweeper kind of arm with plus, we used to have plus command, and then he would get more out of the four seamer and then the changeup than we expected. So what is your vision of Michael King relative to the others here? Because there's like Cam Schlittler, who was just amazing, doing really well. There's Nick Lodolo, who just had a really great season. I'm curious where you're at there.
Well, first, like, for the most part, Michael King has only been really good in major league innings. Most of them came out of the bullpen, but he did have a track record as a starter. And his 1 year as a starting pitcher, like 2.95 ERA, 28% strikeout rate, 1.19 WHIP in a pitcher's park on a pretty good team. If you say, yeah, that was lucky. Like Michael King isn't a sub 3 ERA arm. Like that was everything breaking right for him. Then I would say, okay, fine. That's cool. I agree with you. Even in the lost year last year, 3.44 ERA with a 1.20 WHIP, the strikeout rate regressed. But is Michael King like a 3.3 ERA, 1.20 WHIP pitcher with a 25-26% strikeout rate? Because to me, that's totally fine in like the mid 30s, you know, starting pitchers. Like that's a pretty solid arm with a good chance at double digit wins on a pretty good team.
Yep. I mean, he's had 25% strikeout rates. The WHIP is the interesting one of 8% plus walk rates and, you know, 1.20 essentially for 2 years as a starter. Yeah, maybe I haven't done my team rotations on Michael King yet. I haven't done the Padres yet. And it's just where I am is like, there is heightened health risk and it's not quite the finished product yet. Right.
But to me, is the heightened health risk because he was a converted reliever or because of this shoulder thing last year?
Shoulder thing last year.
So I would need to speak to a medical doctor because that's not me. However, the fact that it was a pinched nerve and not something that he suffered
from
pitching,
yes,
to me is like that's not connected to, hey, he threw a lot of innings the year before and then it was a wear and tear thing. It was like, you could pinch a nerve in a number of different ways just living your life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Theoretically, I mean, not hypothetically.
Well, what allegedly, I'm trying to get
this at. Happened sleeping.
Right.
Which I buy. I've hurt myself sleeping so many times. and so we'll see if it did or didn't. But to me, it was not a baseball-related injury. It was an injury which impacted his ability to pitch a baseball.
Right. Well, what I'm getting at, though, is that when he did come back, it didn't look like Michael King. And sure. I think that Michael King is more reliant on command than other pitchers around here. And we saw that in the beginning, actually, of 24 when he was starting, like the first month or so, he didn't have a good feel for his sweeper. It wasn't quite the right attack. And when he did come back, it just wasn't him locating as well as we've seen. And it just kind of... It puts me in a place of like, okay, when we last saw you, you weren't back yet. You know, you weren't there. And so it has that heightened element of like, okay, like I'm putting some risk into that. That's what I mean by like the shoulder and the pinched nerve is more of like that injury, like set him back. And it's not like the last we saw him, he's fine. And yeah.
I will just say he also dealt with he was pitching through a knee issue in September also. So in addition to the nerve, when he was pitching, he wasn't pitching at 100%. And then if you look at it, it's like, yeah, it wasn't good. But, you know, let's take off the 2 runs in 2 innings in his first game back against the Red Sox. And then he missed another month because of the knee issue. Then 2 runs in 5 innings against the Reds, 5 shutout innings against the White Sox, 2 2/3 shutout innings against the Diamondbacks. 8 runs in 3 innings against the Mets.
Right.
So one really bad performance. He did not look, he wasn't striking out a lot of guys. He didn't look great, but it wasn't a train wreck either. Mm-hmm. It was just a guy who was pitching through multiple injuries who didn't look like himself. And so, you know, like we said, I had him 8th last year. And so I believe in the overall talent. I've dropped him down to 29th. Could I move him below like Schlittler and Schnell and Imanaga down to like 34? Like, sure. Fine.
I like that it was Schnell, by the way. I think the important takeaway, guys, is understanding that this is the area where it's going to be attacking starters for us. We're talking about avoiding the top tier a lot, waiting on it a bit. And around here is where you're actually going to get like your SP3-4 and maybe into the next tier as well. Who do you see inside of this that you're like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be getting this guy. and maybe the other one as well.
I will just say I moved up Cam Schlittler. You know, when I mentioned him in my first pitch Arizona presentation, I still don't love that to righties. He is three fastball variations. He doesn't throw anything under 91.5 miles an hour to righties because it's all cutter, sinker, four seamer. And like, if you want to say, hey, he throws like he mixes in his curveball, and it's like, yeah, 5% of the time.
Oh, I thought it was more. Yeah.
6% of the time. So like, to me, that's 6% of the time doesn't.
Yeah. Really, I mean, it's 11% with the sweeper, but yeah, I'm with you. The sweeper is early, and then the curveball is only being really thrown in two strike counts, and it was a 14% put away rate.
And I was like, well, the only pitch he really like misses bats with is the cutter. But then I said, okay, well, I started looking more at the usage. Like, the cutter to righties is it's 37% in two strike counts, and it has an over 23% put away rate. Like, it is a really good two strike pitch for him against righties. Huh. So I told myself, like, I was walking back the, like, hey, his only real swing and miss pitch is a cutter, because that's also kind of his swing. That's his swing and miss pitch to lefties also. And so it's like, other than the four seamer.
Yeah, I was about to say the four seamer is the driver for all of it. It is the highest swing strike rate to both lefties and righties.
His only swing and miss secondary is a cutter.
Yes.
But it is impactful. And it's like, okay, so I would love a little bit more diversity in the pitch mix. And I don't love, you know, the Spencer Schwellenbach of it all, of somebody like really really getting a jump in velo and having to carry that over a full season. It makes me a little nervous.
Sure.
But I've come around on him. So I moved him up above like Imanaga, Lodolo, Chandler, Burns, those guys. But I will say, like, in this tier, I'm getting a lot of Edward Cabrera. He's 38 for me. I like Edward Cabrera. I like where he landed. I like the changes we saw last year. You know, I'm getting a lot of Michael King at 29. I'm getting a lot of Ryan Pepio, who's ranked 28th for me. Those are the guys that I seem to be. And I'm saying I'm getting a lot of, like, I haven't done a draft yet. I am anticipating getting a lot of based on where current ADP is at. Sure. I'm much higher on the market than, and I'm higher on the market than the ADP market than Bubba Chandler. And I'm happy to take it. I think he belongs in with Schlittler and Burns. I just don't know why Burns is going like 45 picks ahead of him. And I just don't believe that there's that big of a gap. And I think your only argument is, hey, the Pirates love to do stupid things with their prospects, and maybe he doesn't start the year in the rotation.
We've seen on paper four straight games of 10 Ks with Chase Burns. And we've talked about this before, of like three of them were against bad teams, and one of them was the Dodgers, and even the Dodgers won.
And he had a 4.24 ERA even in that stretch.
Right. My whole argument about Chase Burns is that he has more pitchability already, and like the ability, I think, the foundation of command with his four seamer in slider that I think he's actually going to be more than just Hunter Green with just two pitches. It remains to be seen. And I think Bubba Chandler's still too much of a mystery.
Think there deserves, there should be a 45 pick gap between those two guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess we'll see how it turns out.
I mean, I think just based on like, okay, we understand Chase Burns a little bit more. At least we've seen like proven ability in some fashion, while Bubba Chandler, I think there's a fear of it being like the Jackson Jobe more so with Bubba, right? Like, we finally got Jackson Jobe starting with the Tigers, and he was like, oh, the guy. And then we were banging the drum for him to show up the previous year. He didn't really. And then he did, and it looked great. We're really happy. And then I think that's the fear. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, guys. Bubba Chandler has a better four-seamer than Jackson Jobe. It's just, I think that's what's happening. And I don't know. I think on a lot of leagues, I'm not going to have either one. Just because I'm probably going to take Cam Schlittler instead. Probably going to take Ryan Pepio instead. I'm going to take Tatsuya Imai instead. Because Imai, to me, is just such lovely safety.
I like Imai, and I think he's being unfairly maligned, I guess, right now, based on what his ADP is.
I'm trying as much as I can not to take the young could be something guy as much as I could. So that's just kind of where I am. And by the way, to see Jesus Luzardo is an ADP of 21 right now. I don't know.
I can't do it. So I'm sorry. It's too high for me.
Yep. We're very much on the same page there. All right. We're going to move to the next one, which I got to say, like, we are very much on the same page with a lot of guys, but there is one that does stand out for me. And sure. I might be siding with you over time. This tier is called I Like You. So there's that. I guess I have that. What movie is that from?
It's also from Garden State.
Oh my gosh, come on.
Listen, it's a good movie. It had good quotes. Harry, and they
you're fit. From Brooklyn.
And they fit.
Okay, this is Sandy Alcantara, Nolan McLean, Sonny Gray, Robbie Ray, Cade Horton, Rangers Horace at 45, Trevor Rogers 46, and Andrew Abbott rounding it out. Robbie Ray at 43 is the interesting one to me because I've traditionally put him in that Framber Valdez area. And I'm more inclined along with you to put Robbie Ray here, but Shota Managa at 33, Robbie Ray at 43. It to me seems they seem somewhat similar where you're trading whip for ERA almost with between sure. Managa and Ray. I'm curious to hear your thoughts there.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I had Robbie Ray right next to Shota Imanaga. and then the Giants signed Luis Arraez, and I move Robbie Ray down.
Look, I'll tell you this. If Robbie Ray is volatile, he will be bad. If he's not volatile, he will be good.
And that's where, like, I'm saying, listen, this happened last night. So, like, it was a reactionary move, but I was just like, this infield defense is going to be awful. Robbie Ray is not.
Well, the left, the right side of the infield is going to be awful.
Sure.
Chapman and Adames.
Though, to be fair, Adames was awful until the last 2 years. So, yes, he's going to, I don't think he's bad. But yes, the right side of this infield could be awful. But also acknowledging throughout his career, Robbie Ray tends to not be a really high ground ball rate pitcher. So, probably won't be impacted by it as much. So, he might wind up going back into the tier above, and it probably makes more sense because there's a little bit more of a ceiling for him than like some of these like Cade Horton, Ranger Suarez arms. There's a little bit more of the volatility to Robbie Ray that I think fits better in the tier above. So maybe I just put him at 40 and I put him under Imai or something, but I think that might be where we come down on.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. It really does bother me that Robbie Ray just cannot be consistent with secondaries. And it's a high vert four seamer and he locates it really well upstairs. But dude, do not go like 70% four seamers, please. It's just one of those things. Among the others here, I mean, Cade Horton, he's such an interesting one among this because he had a really good rookie season and we're all kind of like, he's fine. There's like no excitement surrounding him.
Yep.
And I think we all don't really know what is going to come out of the oven in his second season, right? Like, is he going to develop a better swinging strike rate pitch? Is he going to be better than a 20% swinging strike rate guy? I think he is. But it's tough. And by the way, those who are trying to find the list of this, Eric will be posting this on NBC. When will that be?
That'll be early, not next week, but the week after.
So we're getting a nice preview right now.
Yes.
For the On the Corner podcast here. And yeah, and also I see Ranger Suarez in this, and I don't like Ranger Suarez. I just can't. I think of anyone here, he's so precarious where he gets in this rhythm and he's able to nail it just right. And I think guys like Andrew Abbott and even Trevor Rogers, I trust them more as the swatch types. And Fenway's Fenway, and I'm like, oh, that just feels weird.
But Citizens Bank was also not good.
No, I'm thinking about the claustrophobic nature of Fenway.
Sure.
It's something that, you know, talks about a lot. Picture, and I'm like,
yeah, I'm treating Ranger Suarez the exact same as I have historically. Mm,
sure.
Cade Horton, I feel you on that. Like, we've talked about this before. It's like, I don't love the fastball. That like cut ride fastball.
I kind of dig it. It works.
Well, I don't love it in terms of like, I'm looking at the foundation of like, what's the next step? I don't think the fastball becomes a swing and miss fastball.
No.
And so
think of it like a serviceable two seamer that works on both sides of the plate.
The other young guys, Schlittler, Chandler, Burns, who are in the tier above, Mizorowski, who are in the tier above, I can much more easily tell myself a story of where the strikeouts come from.
Well, right. Well, I mean, that's really the thing about Cade Horton. I think we would agree, though, that the foundation and like the trust of the Cubs for a full year, like the regular volume is more there, I think, for Cade Horton.
Sure. I mean, I think the Yankees need Schlittler. They, you know.
Absolutely. Would you say that Schlittler has a higher injury risk than Cade Horton?
Yes.
Right. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Cade Horton, I think he like blew out his arm in college. Like I need to go back and look at it, but I think Cade Horton has a far more checkered injury history.
Well, he certainly had this shoulder thing that took him out of all of 2024, I think it was. But he had
Tommy John surgery in 2022, and then he had a shoulder strain in 2024. So there's some injury history there with Horton.
So who is the guy in this tier that you feel like you would be gravitating to in drafts of anyone?
None.
He's staring at it being like none.
Yeah. Whoever, if somebody falls, I wouldn't be targeting any of these guys in terms of like, I wouldn't go into my draft and say, I have to have Ranger Suarez. I have to have Andrew Abbott.
It should never be like that.
Yeah. Right. But I would be fine with these guys in like an SP4 range if they fell to me. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, Sandy Alcantara, I have 40. I do think I prefer him the most of this group. If I'm now looking at him as a safe floor arm for decent ratios and innings, and I think we're going to get that one more year removed from Tommy John. And, you know, we've seen how good he can be when he's fully healthy. And then again, there is the, I'm not drafting him with this in mind, just acknowledging there remains the, I get traded to a much better team at the deadline possibility of Sandy Alcantara.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we've talked incessantly about Nolan McClain. We're not going to do that, but I would take him over all of these in a heartbeat. I would put him, I'm probably going to put him around 31, something like that.
Just because
it's such a good sinker to right-handers.
I know.
I believe there is something to it that does work, even though he's riskier than the ADP right now suggests. Sure. That's what I'm getting at. All right, we're going to move to the next tier, which is, you have a very interesting start to it. This one says, life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. So you're calling these guys cherry bombs. And that is, of course, Forrest Gump. This is Kodai Senga at 48, Trey Savage at 49, Bryce Miller at 50, Gavin Williams, 51, Aaron Nola, 52, Kevin Gausman, 53, Shane Boz, 54, and Emmett Sheehan, 55. And what I'll say is, I feel like Kodai Senga is higher than I expect. Kevin Gausman and Trey Savage are lower than I expect.
Fully embrace that on Trey Savage. I'm acknowledging I'm having a real hard time figuring him out.
Right.
Just in terms of like, I know people are going to say, how are you having a hard time figuring out he dominated in the playoffs? I understand that. I watched. I've seen a lot of guys dominate in the playoffs and then not repeat that over a full season next season. I get it. I'm talking about just like looking at his pitch mix, movement profiles, things like that. I have a tough time figuring out how that over the course of a full MLB season leads to like a Chase Burns type upside, a Cam Schlittler type upside, whatever it might be.
So for me, it's the slider is actually good. And what normally we see with like a fastball splitter guy is that there isn't that. Jonah Tong. I mean, Hurston Waltrip, I guess, is adding one, but then Kevin Gausman. Bryce Miller is actually kind of being like that. So it's weird to see that. Wait, hold on a second. He also has this slider. Now, the fastball is strange because we see the super steep attack angle without the vert that you would normally get. And it feels like this should be a constant home run machine. But what we have heard is that hitters are not used to it. And it's incredibly difficult to pull the trigger when the splitter is what it is. So it does, like, I'll put it this way. If the fastball is just fine, this is a great pitcher because you have this consistent splitter and you have this really good slider. Like you have that stabilizing slider that is also a whiff pitch to righties. So that's kind of where I'm inclined to go in on it. However, it could very well just blow up in our face if the splitter is just gone for a moment and now he has to deal with only this fastball and guys can just go for the fastball. That would be very bad.
I guess we have to acknowledge we're operating under small sample sizes for MLB data. Just because it was three starts and then it was the postseason. But like the slider got hit hard in the three regular season starts. It actually missed bats better against lefties than righties because it's like a hard, tight slider. Yeah. And so, you know, he used it a decent amount, 35% in two strike counts against righties. But in those three starts, again, three starts, but it had just a 12% put away rate against righties.
Yeah.
We know he turns to the splitter a lot. That is the swing and miss pitch. He used that 63% of the time against righties in two strike counts. So that is his swing and miss pitch. But I guess maybe where I come down on it is like when I watch the slider and I look at how the slider performed, I don't know how much confidence I have in the slider as like a plus pitch. Mm-hmm. Like it might be a decent secondary, but if he's an elite splitter with a decent slider and a decent four seamer, what does that do over the course of a full season?
Right. I mean, we can go back and forth about it, honestly. And it's like the fact that there is any haze, whether he's not going to be good or whether he's going to be great, that itself creates this area of like, well, hold on. Why should I go for that when there's something that's just much more believable to beat this thing and I can plan around that, right? And that's really the kind of thing that we're talking about I'm personally not really going for the young guys, which sounds so
crazy
because I love them all and they're so fun. And it's just not like the wisest thing to do. So that's kind of where I am now. I'm seeing Kodai Senga, 48. I understand that he was good before he got hurt and he came back and the calf injury wasn't great and so on. But even then, when he was in the first half, it was overperforming in my view. And the fastball velocity is still down. The cutter isn't nullifying as much as it was in his premier season. It feels like Kodai Senga's fine and not really that solid Holly for me. I'm going to have him lower, I think, than you are, probably in the tier after the IL guys.
I guess my question to you is, do you believe in anything you saw in 2023?
Do I believe in that he is that guy?
Yeah. Do you believe that? Do you think 2023 was total fabrication, or do you think that there's some truth that 2023, like, is an accurate representation of who he is?
Well, I think it's not a fabrication, but he was throwing harder.
Okay.
And better with the slider and better with the cutter than we've seen since.
So do you think that like there's an argument to be made that like he can get a little bit more back to that version?
I don't trust that argument. I think it's a better argument that like that's 3 years ago. And that was also him in his first season from Japan where he has a little bit more adrenaline to prove. Now it's.
But then he had an arm injury and was coming off an arm injury.
Right.
And then multiple lower body injuries.
Yeah.
So another full year kind of like removed from that arm injury from some of the more major it's lower possible. Body injuries.
I understand where you can go on either side of this one. I'm leaning away from it.
I guess to me, 48 is saying he's not 2023 Kodai Senga, but he's a little better than the version we saw pitch at the beginning of last year. Mm-hmm. And we know the beginning of last year, even though the stats were really good, the underlying results suggested that he was overperforming. And so maybe he's a slightly worse version of the pitcher we saw in 2023, but he's going to be on a good team. And I think that is worthy of being a top 50 starting pitcher.
So you know what's funny? There is a guy one tier, two tier, three tier, four tiers later, I would rather have than Kodai Senga.
Okay.
And maybe more than anyone else in this, I mean, I would rather have Trey Savage, Kevin Gausman too. I think I've again, the pendulum swing on the whip essentially is what's going on. He found his splitter again. I feel like, you know what? I think that was a weird anomaly. Sure. But we'll get to him soon and we will after this break. So the next tier is Life is Pain, Highness. What is that? Like Princess Bride or something?
Princess Bride. Okay. Greatest movies ever, Princess Bride.
I got it. Nailed it. And this really is something that I think is going to change in like a month. So we can't, I don't really want to lean into this as much. I would say Shane Bieber and Carlos Rodon are more certain, or at least like are more clear to me to being affected than Shane McClanahan, Anthony Ivaldi, Brandon Woodruff, and Chris Bubich. But I could be very wrong in that. At least Carlos Rodon, we already know he's missing time.
Yes.
And the other guys, we're not quite sure yet.
And Rodon, but Rodon, I put in this tier because he is, he's further along than I anticipated.
How far is he?
The last report is that he will throw innings in spring training, and then he will.
Yeah, then he'll but he will like be, a couple weeks.
He will be using
like
that as a ramp up, and then he'll be back in May. But I had previously thought like end of May, early June, whatever.
Yeah, that's optimistic, and I hope that's right.
Yeah,
my rule is just like nope. I would rather take a TGS guy.
Again, that's why he's in this tier and not the other injury tier later.
That's the one I would go for, though.
The other injury tier later is like, these guys are both all potentially missing multiple months.
Sure. Ranger Suarez was the only one last year that we worked after missing the first month and coming back in May for the non-TGS injury, which I think is fascinating. But we're going to skip through that one. It's safer in the cockpit than the cargo bay. What is that from?
Toy Story.
Wow, that's fun. Good stuff there. And you're saying this because you feel like this is your Toby tier of Luis Castillo, Seth Lugo, Noah Cameron, Matthew Boyd, and Ryan Nelson.
Yeah.
Cool.
This is the tier that would be higher in a 15-team league.
I'm probably only drafting Noah Cameron if he's down here. Maybe Ryan Nelson. But Luis Castillo, Seth Lugo, Matthew Boyd, I'm probably out on. Boyd, if he's like my last pick, I would do because I think the Cubs are good in the first 2 months.
I will say, I think it was Justin Mason at First Pitch Arizona who said to us in our presentation, Luis Castillo's never finished outside of the top 40 starting pitchers. Why do you guys have him so low? And I was like, that's actually a good point.
Fair enough. Luis Castillo.
And I have him outside of the top 40, but at some point, he just has proven to be a what you're getting. And that's kind of what I think about this tier. You know,
with Castillo, I keep seeing degradation each year. And the reason that he was able to survive in the second half of last season was the greatest four-seamer command he's ever had in his life, which doesn't seem right to me. And also, he's not good away from Seattle. So generally, I would even suggest you start him in Seattle and not, unless it's like an amazing matchup on the road. And that to me just doesn't feel like a guy that I would personally want to have in my roster. But I could be very wrong. I love Luis Castillo. I mean, he's right above me on my right shoulder. So I love the guy. Hopefully Ryan Nelson discovers a secondary. But the four-seamer is great. And he's still been productive with just the four-seamer. So it makes me more inclined, I think, to go for him.
If Ryan Nelson had a secondary, he'd be much higher.
Yes.
Right. But I had to rank him in this area because to me, it's like he's also never been bad even without it. And so even if he's the same guy, like this feels kind of fine.
Mm-hmm. Next one is a tier that we hinted at. I just can't afford any more delays. And you're a fish that causes delays. Gerrit Cole, Justin Steele, Jared Jones, and Zach Wheeler. It makes sense. These are all the ones that like are the pickups in season. I would probably flip-flop Wheeler and Jones personally.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, I have Jones higher than Wheeler because the last report from the Pirates is that Jones could actually start the year healthy.
Say what?
Yes.
Is he getting like just an internal brace then?
Jared Jones?
Yeah.
I believe so. Let me pull up. It was internal brace in May. It was internal brace. Where is this article?
Sports excited to watch Jerry Jones.
Sports Illustrated article, but also there's a blog called Bucks Dugout. But there was also a Sports Illustrated article, which in January, beginning of January, mentioned that he could return to game action anywhere between March and May. And there's the potential that he begins the season in the bullpen to manage his workload. So for me, it's just like, I'm putting him here because there's a potential he returns between March and May. Let's see what happens in spring. Let's see how things are tracking. if he's going to start the year in rotation, I may adjust the rankings. If he's going to start the season in the bullpen, you know, I may move him down, but not super far down. If he's going to start the year in AAA and not come up until May, he might go down even further. There's just a wide range right now.
Yeah. Man, that'd be so cool if he shows up. The next tier is the one that I was hinting at before. And I feel like this is really where we actually are going to have our late targets. 71 is Mackenzie Gore, Tanner Bibee, 72, Spencer Strider, 73, Ian Seymour, Joey Cantillo, Ryan Weathers, and Grayson Rodriguez. And it's faith is believing in things when common sense tells us not to. And what is that from?
Miracle on 34th Street.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. And Mackenzie Gore, you know, this is so funny to me. I was realizing this just throughout my day today. I have not gotten into the Texas Rangers yet or the Washington Nationals, so I haven't really done my thorough deep dive. But hot dang, I'm going to draft him everywhere.
Some part of me wants to put him so much higher. Like
I'm doing it.
Like 1 year, the half season is going to become a full season.
Yes.
I just don't know when it's going to be, but it is going to happen.
And it's going to happen this year.
Like I really could put him in that life is like a box of chocolates tier in like the low 50s.
Yeah, I'm going to put him. That's the guy that I started to put above Senga.
Yeah.
Like, so Mackenzie Gore to me, it just makes too much sense. We've been looking at him and saying, you have absurd stuff.
Yeah.
And the situation is just terrible. The Nationals defense, terrible. The people around him, terrible. Say for like James Wood and C. Abrams or whatever, but it's just like the most demoralizing place to pitch.
Sure.
The coaching staff has been not the best. I mean, we have Sean Doolittle, awesome, but like not much support. And finally, here he goes to the Rangers, where instead of Mackenzie Gore being the veteran, being like the leader, it's now Nathan Eovaldi and Jacob DeGrom, right? Like this is, finally, he gets his opportunity to settle in and just do his thing in an incredible pitcher's park. Right. With a good defense behind him. I mean, this is in a better pitching development situation. I feel like this is when we talk about like the Mike Burrows sleeper of him going from Pittsburgh to Houston. Oh, my gosh. This is that. But like this is the Garrett Cole to Houston situation to me.
I will say, like, I know some people might be like, oh, well, how much does this kind of stuff matter? And I just have talked to people who work for teams, and I can tell you that the amount of respect from other pitchers that Nathan Eovaldi has is off the charts.
Yes.
In terms of like his value as a leader of a rotation. And I say that knowing full well that Jacob DeGrom is probably is the better pitcher in terms of like what
your
highs were.
Not the better teammate.
But Nathan Eovaldi is probably the leader in that rotation.
Yes, I would agree with that completely.
And I think that Mackenzie learning from him and not Mackenzie, what veteran was guiding Mackenzie Gore in Washington? That's right,
exactly. None.
Yeah.
Jake Irvin?
Right.
Sorry, Jake. You're actually.
I moved him as we were talking. Because I wanted to do it before, and
I'm telling you, go.
I'm too bullish, and so I'm doing
it. I really was just like I had a moment. I don't know what it was, just a watershed moment of like this is it. You know, to have a guy that literally an opening day, what was it, 14 strikeouts against the Phillies, like, and it was a different slider. And what if you look at a trajectory of a season, we think like, oh, first half, second half, morale is a thing. At the start of the year, you're excited, you're amped, you feel like you can win, you feel like your team's got your back, all this stuff. And then, second half hits, and it's like, this is, why am I doing it?
Yeah.
Like, the wind goes out of your sails. It completely changes you, and you throw someone in a scenario where it matters, and you really feel like, okay, I gotta be my A game throughout the year. You know, he's getting closer to free agency now. Like, this is it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so in on Mackenzie Gore. I'm so thrilled.
Very quick aside, but Tim Healy, who covers the Red Sox for the Boston Globe, said that the Red Sox never made an offer to Eugenio Suarez because once they signed Ranger Suarez, their priority became defense in the infield. And okay. So
I thought you were going to say something
else. Thing, I'm just saying they understand the type of pitcher they're getting, and they're saying like, we have to set this type of pitcher up for success, and we can't have Eugenio Suarez at third base with Rangers.
They could only have one Suarez on the jerseys, guys. Right. They refused to have an R Suarez and an E Suarez.
Yeah.
That was it. It was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, we went with Ranger. All right. So we got another tier now of, I actually do want to mention inside of this, Ryan Weathers, I find myself like, we're past the point of, I know this is going to be good for me. And I feel like Ryan Weathers is the perfect, like, let's just see where this goes.
Yeah. For me in this tier, it's, I'm going to have a lot of Ian Seymour this year.
Yeah. The problem is that it might be Madsen Boyle.
I don't see it happening. I know that's what it says. Come on, Joe Boyle's not going to win a starting spot in the rotation.
Joe Boyle is your Patrick Sandoval.
Okay. All
right. Steven Matz, actually. I'll say it's Steven Matz, really.
Listen, Steven Matz was great as a reliever. Just keep him as a reliever. I don't get it. He was great as a reliever.
Grayson Rodriguez is also here, and I understand it. I would probably, I don't know. I feel
I don't really want to draft Grayson Rodriguez, but ranking him 77th, I'm not drafting him.
Sure.
People are going to take him so much higher. I don't want anything to do with it.
So here's something interesting. We don't have much time left. The kid's long gone. The kid's long gone. This old is all there is left. I got to live with that. What is
Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, nice. Okay.
It should be this.
That was a really good Morgan Freeman, Nick. Thank you. And so we got Jack Flaherty, Joe Musgrove, Merrill Kelly, Jameson Taillon, Zach Gallen, Zach Eflin. I will tell you right now, I think that Zach Eflin is one of the best sleepers in 15-teamers right now.
And ranking him 83rd based on his ADP, like, I would probably get him a lot because people hate him. He's like going outside the top 400.
Yeah, he's right. He is going outside the top 400 along the lines of Ryan Weiss. But not much to say there. I feel like I would rather have Eflin and Kelly than the rest. And maybe, sure, why not, Joe Musgrove, see where it goes. Taillon and Flaherty, to me, are below that, personally. Sure. But then again, Taillon, for at least the first 2 months, was that good scenario in Chicago. And he's not been under... He's always been under a four-year rate, guys.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. We are really running out of time. Last thing I'll say here is Troy Melton, Roky Sasaki, Reed Detmer, Zebby Matthews, Will Warren, Andrew Painter, Landon Roop, Jack Leiter, Herson Waldrip, and 93 David Peterson is a lucky man, but you're crazy. That tier makes all the sense because these are the young guys and you don't really think they're going to be in a rotation, or if they are, you can't really trust them.
Yeah, for sure.
There you go.
Said it so well.
And what was the category movie?
I like you, man, but you're crazy. It's old school when he gets shot in the neck with the sleeping dart.
Oh, man. I'm going to save the rest because maybe you and I will talk about it in our next podcast. But Eric, thank you so much for doing this exercise with me.
Thank you.
I'm excited to get mine finally solidified.
The Reed Detmers ranking, one of the first articles, I've already prepped it. It's going to come out. It's on post-type starting pitchers. Reed Detmers is in there. Ian Seymour's in there. So there are some guys like that where I kind of like shopping in the, hey, we used to really like this guy, and for some reason we decided not to anymore. And I understanding where they're going, right? Like when I say shopping in that tier, I mean, I'm not taking Reed Detmers as my top 30 starting pitchers, but those are the guys I'll gamble on at the end of drafts. And we'll see if some of them hit,
I would probably say a lot of content coming down the grapevine. Has the opportunity is one I would go above. I think all of them, but we'll see. We'll talk more about this.
Which guy though? Did you say
Jack Leiter? Sure. Jack Zippo.
Sure, Jack Zippo. I know you love Troy Melton too. If he gets a spot,
well, the thing is, I don't think he will.
I said that to Lance Brosnahan, and he said, "There's no way you could start Drew Anderson over Troy Melton." And
so you will. No way you start Carlos Carrasco over Will Warren, but what do you know? All right, guys, that is going to do it for this episode of On the Corner. I am Nick Pollock, the Lion.
I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
And I'm going to go research more movie quotes.